And we are now live.
Welcome, everyone. It is Wednesday, January 5th, 2022, our first meeting of the Board of Directors for this new year. Thanks so much for taking the time to be here. It's currently 5 o'clock. We anticipate this meeting will go no later than 6:30 p.m. This is a work session. So I'm going to start with roll call. Emily Secord. I see her. She's talking. We're good. Pete Knox.
Here.
Thanks, Pete. Don Norden.
Here.
Thanks, Don. Michelle Weber.
Here.
Thanks, Michelle. Susan Cox.
Listen.
Thank you, Susan. And Gino Grimaldi.
Here.
Thanks, Gino. So really quick comments from the board president. Since we're at 5 o'clock, that means all my kids are home. So you might get me freezing because of a Wi-Fi overload. So Don, are you prepared to lead the charge with if and when I freeze?
If and when you freeze.
All right, great. Appreciate everyone being patient as we navigate this digital age with meetings. I took away the tablets and hid them under my bed, but who knows if that'll really stop them. But in seriousness, I want to once again thank everyone for being here tonight. Really looking forward to the conversation that we're going to have and excited to really kind of start digging into this GM recruitment process. I know that we got a document sent to us last night. I myself really didn't have probably a ton of time to digest it, just scan it so far. And I think some other board members had the same experience. So that might just be part of our conversation today as we talk about maybe having a few more questions. I just wanted to give that kind of preface that we might have some additional questions, or we might not seem it as understanding of a concept. Hopefully I'm not alone in that boat. I know one other board member had that same experience. But once again, thanks for being here to our East Coast friends. And Mark, what comments do you have for this board of directors in this new year?
Yeah, thanks, Caitlin, and hi, Tooth. Thanks for everyone being here. It's good to have a full board as we enter the new year. So, and as you know, a lot going on, and GM search is just one of the primary things that we have going on, and certainly a primary one for the board. And yeah, and I do apologize for the lateness of the materials getting to you. You know, our goal is to get them well in advance, and that didn't happen. So we will continue to try to do better on that. Tonight, it's really an update on what we've been doing and what Transpro's been doing as far as public outreach, about what they've been doing as far as trying to understand, you know, the salary and what we can expect. And there's no real decision that needs to be made tonight. It really is just kind of here's what we're doing. There's the draft as far as the salary analysis and where how far they've gone in that. And so it really is an opportunity for you to say, yeah, you're on the right track, or no, you're not on the right track, and offer input to them to see how we move forward. So with that, I will turn it over to Aaron.
Oh, actually, hey, Rick, we need to do announcements and additions to the agenda real quick, and then we can move on to our first agenda item.
Okay.
Sorry, just have to follow protocol really quick. The good news is I have no additions to the agenda, but I want to make sure if any of the board members have announcements.
Well, I kind of reluctant to drag this up again, but I'm feeling like, well, read through the ad hoc committee on the bylaws, and I'm just concerned about how we dealt with the general counsel. So, you know, not to discuss with it now, but to put it onto another agenda, is I feel like perhaps we should go into an RFP and get a general counsel on in a standard fashion than just dealing with a maelstrom of, you know, just having to deal with an emergency situation. So that's just what I'd like to add to a future agenda at some point. And then hopefully we can drop it from there. If the board decides to go further, it could do that. Otherwise, I'm content to let it be.
Don, did you say you watched the recording of the bylaw ad hoc committee? Oh, you're on mute.
No, I didn't watch it. I was just reading it.
Oh, reading it. Okay, got it. Yes, Mark, I think Mark, and I can follow up with you, absolutely. Susan, you have your hand raised.
I just wanted to follow up with one of the articles that was in the latest newsletter. And when Pat was identifying the fact that coming up is the, I apologize for not remembering exactly which day, but we're blue whatever day for anti-human trafficking and how much that's an issue with regard to transportation. And I don't know if it's appropriate, but I'd really like to see us highlight that. And is that something that the board can do a proclamation? Can we all wear blue? Can we do something to just highlight that for our community?
Mark, did you have a response?
Yeah, I mean, we can draft a proclamation certainly for the board to sign.
I guess I'd like to hear if others support that idea. I just thought, I just so appreciated that the article, and it just seemed like this is something that we can make the community aware that we're supportive of this,
and we're
that little hashtag out there. And
yeah, and we are working closely with the Springfield Rotary Club. As a matter of fact, they have a event tonight. As a matter of fact, to kick it off, we have provided advertising on our buses in support of the campaign, and mm-hmm. been working closely with the community members on it. So I'm not sure what else you're thinking that we want to do.
Well, I mean, I would, for those of us who are on social media, I think it'd be good for us to, you know, follow up with that little hashtag and, you know, the blue little logo and so on. So we don't need to spend a lot of time on it, but I really appreciated that note in the newsletter and thought, wow, this is a great thing for us to highlight.
Michelle?
Mark said some of the things I was going to share. Springfield Rotary is tonight doing an event to bring awareness to that very, very critical and important topic. And I think I could probably contact our fellow Rotarian and see what more we as LTD board members and supporters of our community could do to support that effort.
Thanks, Michelle, that'd be great. Okay. Thanks, everybody. Now, without further ado, we will go on to our sole agenda item of the work session. So, Aaron, kick us off.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Happy New Year, everybody. Appreciate the opportunity to be here with you today. Want to echo just Mark's note. We apologize for the lateness of the materials. We'll certainly do our part to ensure the board has ample time going forward. I'm going to share a screen and dig in a little bit to this. So as Mark said, and I'll reiterate, this is a briefing. We're not, you know, here asking the board to make any decisions on anything today. Everything you're looking at is wet paint, if you will, in a work in progress. I do also want to highlight Mike Setzer. Our executive placement practice lead is with us as well, and Nicole McCleary, who you all know, working with you on the strategic plan implementation. So you're fully surrounded by Transprovians tonight. Real quick, gonna just cover an update on the discovery that we're doing and the feedback that we're getting from the community in alignment with the feedback we've received from you all to date as board members. We had in our scope a kind of a high level analysis of compensation salaries that really just want to present to you to start to frame what might expectations be in the market of our qualified candidates that we begin to evaluate in the process into the spring. just jog your memory on some of the decisions that you made through the strategic business plan process and current compensation structure tied to performance and the success outcomes that the organization has identified in the strategic business plan. So a lot of this is stuff you've seen, and really just updating the board on where we are with respect to the process. As a recollection for you, we're doing a lot of engagement here. We've engaged with you all. We were part of your retreat and collected information and feedback there. In addition to some of that work we did with the predictive index profile summary development, we have two surveys in the field right now. I'll talk about where we are with those. One is to the community right now, and also to our employees that are giving us some thoughts and guidance, and really just have a snapshot at a very high level of what we're starting to see. We didn't want to get too deep into the statistical analysis until we close that window. And of course, doing some stakeholder engagement today. Had four really great conversations with people from the community and employee groups giving us perspective, and having a very similar conversation, if those are familiar with it, with your, I think, forgive me, Mark, I'm going to butcher which committee it was, the Ad Hoc Strategic Planning Committee. Does that sound right?
It was Strategic Planning Committee is correct.
Okay, sorry, the Strategic Planning. I gave him two more words. The Strategic Planning Committee, very similar type conversations with them, really robust dialogue and honest, really thoughtful feedback from folks that we're talking with. And Tiffany or Mark can give you the rundown on the folks that we've been meeting with there. So a lot of work happening as we come out of the holidays and starting hot here into this week. Just a reminder, you know, one of the tools that we've been using is this predictive index, and had these initial kind of guides for job profile summaries. I think that one of the things that's been interesting is as we've been having conversations and starting to get feedback, and you'll see this in just kind of the early glimpse at the community and employee survey is the emphasis on communication. That persuader role being somebody that is motivating the team internally through strong communication, that is helping build and portray the value that LTD provides to the Eugene Springfield communities, right? It's continuing to hear this theme around communication and collaboration. Somebody that's collaborating with the unique partners and organizations throughout our community, as well as somebody that's really great at communication, both articulating a point of view and being persuasive in that sense, but also listening, and somebody that's demonstrating they're hearing what the community is saying, bringing that back to the organization, and people can see that in the work that we do. Pause there. Any questions on some of that initial, or shall I just kind of keep going until we get to a break on this point? Emily is nodding. I'm going to take Emily's lead. So on our survey, really, again, communication is beginning to emerge. This is just kind of a word wall of some of the qualitative feedback that we're getting. The community, you see these words, these are themes in terms of competencies and expectations that our community perspective is giving us about the next CEO and general manager. And the employee side is the same. So on the left is kind of the feedback that we're getting from the community. On the right is what we're getting from employees. Through the fourth, we had 37 total employee surveys and 43 stakeholder surveys. I'll pause, Mark and Pat. I know they've really been trying to push to, you know, re-encourage other community partners to engage and get us more feedback. I do not know as of today what the numbers are, but I know that the team is really working to push that out. Mark, is there anything you want to just add, give color to the board regarding that?
I think we pushed out another reminder earlier this week to people that we sent the survey out to remind them to fill it out. And I think we're closing sometime next week. So,
Other things that I think we've heard and are being reflected in our dialogue, and I see the hands up, so I'll call on you folks here shortly. Employee, I think that employee feedback, interesting. again, good listener, focused on, you know, understanding the value of our frontline workers that's emerging, somebody that's friendly, approachable, accessible throughout the organization, hearing that from our employee members, and then from the community. I think a theme that we're really hearing is somebody that's committed to the Eugene community. Very interesting that kind of on the notion of, say, a rising star versus a rock star, a theme that I think is beginning to emerge for us is somebody that really wants to set down roots and be part of the Eugene Springfield community for a long time. So not a transitional leader, you know, 3 to 5 years using Lane as an opportunity to go forward, but somebody that really appreciates what Lane is as the opportunity it is and the community that it is. Gino, sorry, please mute. It might be hover on your picture. It might show up there now. You can, I think, text type it into the chat as well if you want. So he's connecting his audio. I'm going to keep going. And Gino, we can. Oh yeah, there you go.
Okay, I hit the mouse in an odd way. Just wondering what we do with this information. I think it's great information. Yeah. Does this show up in a brochure, a job description? Do we, as a board, look at any of this at some point in time and say, well, no, we agree with that. We don't agree with this.
Yeah, that's a really great question. So the intent here is to take all of this feedback, give you a summary, try and get you something that's a little bit more digestible so that you can really understand the themes that emerge consistently. And then the second thing would be just those, right, just exactly what you said. So A, we want to use this to make sure that the job description aligns with, you know, what we think it ought to be. Giving you insight to say, hey, your community's placing a high value on this, your employees are placing a high value on that. What are the things we want to make sure get reflected in how we advertise the position? That's also going to influence the recruitment strategy that we deploy. Where do we look and who are we looking for? How do they respond? You know, clearly we're going to be looking for somebody that is an incredibly confident communicator and listener, right? I think we've heard that loud and clear. I think that emerged even in our board session. So how do we place a value on that? And as we start to screen candidates that become finalists that we would propose to you, that's how we use that. So it informs the job description. It definitely informs how we talk about the community and the opportunity to potential candidates and any of the marketing materials we would use to help somebody be drawn in. And then, you know, it's kind of your partners in this process being mindful throughout, right? So if we're having a discussion about a potential candidate, you know, we might say, hey, listen, finger in the scale, your community felt really strongly about this as you start to compare top tier candidates to each other and what makes them different if you like too, right? We want to use this information in that way to help inform it. So you should be looking for a summary as well as how this is reflected in the job description that we ultimately post and advertise.
So does this get discussed at a board meeting? Is there a specific point on a schedule somewhere that we can look at this and say, okay, that's when we're doing it?
So we have have times set apart at each board meeting. So we have work sessions. Each work session is dedicated to GM recruitment. And so going forward, you know, we will be talking about it monthly about where we are, how things are looking, getting board input in terms of, you know, by February, we should be pretty close to having the brochure, job description, all those things for your work session. And so, yes, you'll be able to weigh in.
I guess I'd like to express a preference that we not do that in a work session, that we actually review any of this type of material in a regular session so the public has an opportunity to comment on it and we can react to their comments. Also, I think that we have some state laws that if we don't allow the public to provide input on this in a public meeting, I think we're restricted in terms of how we conduct the interviews. And that's whether or not that happens in executive session. But my memory's a little fuzzy on that one. I would check
with you. Yeah, and this is an executive session. So this is a public work session, and we can take public comment at public at work sessions.
Oh, I thought we didn't.
We don't because there, I mean, but we there's nothing that says we can't. So if we decide that, you know, we're down to the point and the board decides, well, we need to put have public input on the more public input than we've already done, for instance, you know, then we can do that. Camille, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but there's nothing that stops us from having public comment at a work session, correct?
That's correct. We have just structured our meeting so that work sessions are typically informational for the board, and regular meetings we do have public comment. We can absolutely have public comment at a work session too. That's no problem.
I'm pretty sure we have had public comment at a work session. I remember Rob Zako and other opportunities of folks speaking. So I think we have done that before.
Great. Ms. Secord.
Hello, nice to see you guys again. Thanks for coming and giving all this great material. I had two questions. One is, when we look at the stakeholder survey total of 43, should we be thinking of that representing, you know, kind of an average of maybe 10 additional folks in the community, or how are you weighting that differently than, let's say, just one individual community member, since they're typically representing a bigger chunk of the community?
Yeah. I want to defer to Mark a little bit on this, and we've leaned on the LTD team, you know, to come up with a list of community stakeholders. It is definitely folks tied into organizations, so it's not intended to be a statistically representative sample of, you know, residents in the Eugene area. You know, honestly, you know, I don't know that we have a. Where did she go? Oh, there you are. you moved on my screen. A formula that would say, you know, one stakeholder voice is representative of X. Pause there and you know, defer to Mark's additional feedback on that.
Yeah, I mean, we sent out to several hundred stakeholders, you know, and you know, getting people actually interested in filling out a survey, even a short survey, is difficult. So, you know, it's really a snapshot of people that are actually interested enough to fill out the survey. Mm-hmm. And you know, even with employees, we only have 37, you know, out of, you know, 200 or, you know, 300 actually. And so, you know, when you send out surveys, you only expect a 10 to 20% reply rate. And so, you know, unfortunate, but that's the way it is. And that's why we're following up with the community meetings. We've got about 85 people lined up for the community meetings. And we have, you know, and like I said, we had four of them today with employee meetings and community meetings to get input about, you know, what they would like to see in the next general manager. So.
Defer on my next question since other people have questions.
Thanks, Ms. Cox. Or sorry, Ms. Weber, I saw it here. I think that's how it's queued up.
Yes, thank you. I know I did run into one person today that had been involved in today's conversations and thought it was a really, really good conversation. Mark, it might be helpful maybe just to share kind of who was involved in those conversations today, just on a, like, you know, high level, just kind of the variety of folks that we're pulling into those conversations.
Yeah, so at the earlier session, we had Senator Beyer and Rob Zako and let's see, who else was in that one? They all blended together. Aaron, you might have the list handy, but—
I believe Lisa Fragolo was there.
Oh yeah, Lisa Fragolo from LCC and—
Mayor Gowing.
Oh yeah, from Cottage Grove. Yeah,
Shannon and I.
Yeah, Sean.
Another session. Another session. We had Brett Rowlett and Dennis Herbert, Chris McAllister, and then we had two employee sessions today. One with folks in our ops and maintenance teams, procurement, and then the other one, kind of our managers.
Yeah, and Brent is from LCC, and. And then Dennis is South Eugene Neighbors Association president, And then Chris McAllister is an active community member. So, you know, we're reaching, we're casting a pretty broad net and reaching, I think, the people that, you know, are important to reach. Certainly we won't be able to schedule everyone, but, we're doing the best we can.
We have sessions next week as well.
Yeah.
Ms. Cox.
Thank you. I guess I'm a bit curious. Is it possible for you to share the list of just who, are participating in the meetings? I'd just be interested to know that. And I would like to make sure that in addition to different community leaders who represent specific groups, what's the outreach to just individuals? Is there any thought of, writers maybe that are not going to be getting, that aren't involved with any of these groups, but are being invited? I know, is there a poster in, one of the downtown hubs or something that says, would you like to be a part of a focus group? And there be a meeting for those individuals. I agree. I don't think people are going to fill out a form, but I think they might be interested in just having an opportunity to just express what their thoughts are. And then also, what is the outreach to the other communities, the people of color specifically?
Yeah, we've reached out to NAACP and it's not Central Latino anymore, but it is that group. So they're all on our list of people to include in the groups. And so we are reaching out to communities of color and underserved communities. And groups of writers, especially in the disability community who serve on committees. So we'll include those as well.
So with respect to the stakeholder and community and employee engagement, we're looking forward to wrapping that up over the course of the next couple of weeks, pulling together a nice tight summary for you all to really understand the themes that emerged. And we'll be sure to point out where and how our recommendations on the job description and such are being reflected in that. I think it's incredibly important that if we're going to go to the trouble to do this much listening, and I don't mean trouble, right? It's a privilege, but we're going to go to the effort here to do this much listening and engage people. Let's do it with intentionality and make sure that we reflect the things we hear in the work that we do going forward. So I think that's a key important, right? If communication is important, it's making sure we reflect how we were listening in the work we do going forward on the job description and such.
And I would say all we can do is give people the opportunity to weigh in. We can't force them to weigh in. And so, we're taking a lot of different steps to give them those opportunities, but that does take some action on their part. So, that's a part that's becoming probably a little more difficult.
All right. So moving forward, one of the other things we mentioned is to start to take a look at potential compensation parameters, right? Again, the purpose of this conversation is not to set the compensation range, but it is to give you a sense of what we might expect to hear as we connect with qualified people and we ask them, where their compensation expectations may lie. And so that's the purpose of some of this work. And also just to briefly revisit, I don't think we need to go too deep into it, but the compensation philosophy that's been adopted going forward. So really working to understand, what's the reasonable base compensation consistent with the market, looked in terms specifically of, people operating within transit at peer agencies throughout the industry, looking at similar public sector or nonprofit type organizations in the region. And then also taking a look at some private sector options, really specifically just understanding, giving you some perspective on how does a for-profit transit operator think in terms of scale Mike is a former executive with a very large transit operations company. We do work with a couple others. So we have some insight into kind of how they frame compensation. So this is about base compensation. You're also working in an incentive compensation model, which could be an opportunity as we get into negotiation, as somebody starts to understand the clarity of what success looks like at LTD, and being able to set themselves up for success and understand how the organization is going to be defining success and what that means to their personal evaluation and performance. Mr. Grimaldi.
When do we set the compensation range?
I think it goes two ways. I do not know what LTD's policy is on that. I think it's something that you all could take forward for a future discussion point. I'll actually pause here. And Mark, is there a range currently on the advertisement? And is that, you know, based on what you do with this data, you know, you all may want to have a discussion about setting that range? That's a great question.
Yeah, the general manager's position, usually we don't post it without the salary range. You know, it's more, at least that's my memory. My recollection is it's, salary commensurate with experience and et cetera. And, you know, so this exercise really kind of for the board to understand what they might be paying that's different what we're paying now. And so if we decide to post the range in the job announcement, we can, but my recollection is that we usually don't.
It's my preference that the board actually set the range. I think it's dangerous to go out to a recruitment, go through a recruitment without that range established, because I don't think our consultants, you know, we'll have a feel for what we'll tolerate unless we do set a range. If we don't set that range and they don't know what we're going to tolerate, we run the risk of falling in love with some person and they say what they want. And it's way beyond what we feel we can afford or justify.
It's certainly useful information to have. Mike and I have both been in that experience that you just described. And so it is good to get a parameter that if somebody is just hard and fast, well beyond, what we can offer, we're not going to burn your time evaluating that person. We may give it the old college try, but Mike, you have a thought on that?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Even if there's not an absolute hard limit, it would be very useful as we begin the recruitment to have a sense of what the board's tolerance is, so that if somebody says, well, I wouldn't come for less than X, and we know that's way beyond the limit, then we can not waste anyone's time pursuing that person. I'd at least like, as we begin recruitment, I'd at least like to have a general idea.
Great point, great discussion. So let's get some bearings on this. Let's start to see what we're looking at. So we, like I said, we looked at three different spaces to try and assess what some peer ranges might look like, and happy to, you know, follow up with the detailed information on this. If it's information you're interested in seeing, we'll show you the peers, we'll show you the dollar amounts and all that stuff. But for, you know, for presentation purposes, we kept it at a high level. So in looking at peer public transit organizations, you can see them down below. On the low end, base compensation was 165 and change. The high end was 284. There was an outlier of the 394, and I will tell you, we did not factor that into the average. We went ahead and pulled that one out. And so in looking at these peers, seeing an average base comp of 197. Yes, Mr. Grimaldi. Yeah, we can't hear you, sir.
Sorry, I'm unfamiliar with the logos down below. Some of them are self-explanatory. Kits of Transit, I can figure that out, and some others, Santa Cruz Metro, but I don't know these others. So,
yeah, sure. Salem, Spokane, Corpus Christi, City of Fresno, Kitsap, CATA, which is the Capital Area Transit in Lansing, Michigan, Interurban Transit Partnership, which is the Rapid in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and Intercity Transit in Olympia, Washington. We did seek out some others, but weren't able to dig up information for some of them.
How did you pick these?
Looked at peers both based on agency size, fleet vehicle size, employee size, community type. Really tried to think and act in terms of those types of peers, type of service profile. So there's no, you know, heavy rail agencies here, for example. And that was our general approach.
So maybe a question for Mark, when we negotiate with our bus drivers, do we look at these same agencies?
We look at, well, interesting enough with our bus operators in the union, it's primarily based in Oregon, but these are what we call, you know, kind of agencies that we look at, like C-Tran is in Vancouver, Washington, right? And so they're a peer, they're almost the same size, have a BRT. Chariots is Salem, and so they're an in-state agency. You know, Intercity in Olympia is about the same size, and Kitsap as well. So those are the comparators that we'd look at for, you know, a lot of different things in Spokane too. And so these are all pretty good comparators for, you know, for the kind of work we do and size we are.
I think it's important that we come closer to using the same comparable agencies across all positions in the organization. I think when we're doing this, you know, if I were a bus operator and a member of the union, I'd raise my hand pretty quick and say, hey, you compare, you set salary range for your CEO based on these agencies. Why can't my salary be based on these agencies? And they may be right. But I think when there's a disconnect, that's not a good thing.
Yeah. And they're all comparables for, all positions really. And so, like I say, the union is a little bit different because there's a little bit different rules on what we can use for comparators, you know, based on state law.
I still don't like the differentiating in terms of the comparables. I think there can be some differences, but these are too far apart for me.
One of the other places we looked at was other public sector nonprofit, particularly in Oregon, Lane County, in the city of Eugene. Again, on the low end there, 115, high end 310, and an average of 215, 885. You can see the agencies there on the bottom. So the Oregon Health Authority, the Legislative Revenue Office, the Chief Education Office, the Department of Transportation, the Department of Health and Human Services, and we got Springfield, the COO in Springfield. I'm going to mispronounce this. The Blackley School District Superintendent, the Edmonds School District Superintendent, Lane Community College President, City of Eugene City Manager, and the Lane County Sheriff's Office for the Sergeant, Mr. Grimaldi. You're on mute again, sir.
Yeah, this one puzzles me the most. I see no direct correlation between our position here and the Chief Education Office, Edmonds School District. I don't get that. Lane Community College, I think you mentioned the City of Springfield's in this list, but I don't see it. And I don't know that it's a comparable position. So these are really irrelevant for me. And I don't know why we're using
it. Sure. We thought about this in terms of what are other public service organizations within the region that, you know, maybe they don't have the exact same scope or relationship, but they're providing a public service, their roles in the public sector, right? So they have a similar profile, but appreciate your differing point of view.
Yeah, and they're just not in the market. They shouldn't be considered.
Any other thoughts, reactions to this? Again, giving you some sense of framing as you go into compensation thoughts long term. Ms. Weber.
I think Gino asked some really good questions, and when I was kind of skimming through this earlier today, those same questions kind of came to my mind. So thank you for giving us some clarification as to why those numbers or those agencies are being looked at. But I agree with Gino. I do think it maybe needs to be looked at a little bit differently or a little bit more closely.
Sure. Ms. Cox.
I agree with both Gino and Michelle. I think when we were talking about number of these, there are, I think, especially the education, there are very specific requirements with regard to credentials. And I think we're looking at some different sort of profile for what we're looking for. So I'm wondering if there isn't some other base here to look at. So I appreciate the effort that's gone into it, but I think it's apples and oranges.
I'm curious if there's a solution or a suggestion here. Are we asking for only, you know, opportunities available in Lane County in the last 12 months? I mean, can we give some parameters or feedback on what we would rather see? Just because I'm not sure how we do this better, if that's what we're asking.
Well, I think that you know, my reaction to what I'm hearing in terms of the feedback is that we're more interested in, say, transit peers than we are in terms of comparing ourselves to other public agencies in the region. A perfectly acceptable approach. Again, the idea here is to make sure you have information in terms of the appetite that we set as we go into a competitive marketplace to find the next leader for the organization. And I think that the thing we all need to remember is it is an employees marketplace. You all have a great opportunity, no doubt. The eyes of the industry are certainly upon it. We also have an openness to maybe a non-transit person in this role. So what are they going to bring in terms of expectations and experiences that they come to the table if they become, you know, a leading viable candidate? So I think as you go forward and thinking about establishing salary parameters, just wanted to give you, you know, information from a couple different perspectives to help inform that. So that my takeaway is more focus here on the transit peer organizations, and wanted to go to this third slide, in that, and this is a little bit more general. This is based more on industry knowledge, and I'll defer to my colleague Mike here, but just that I think everybody knows this, but there are private organizations that operate transit systems throughout the country. They hire managers and or hire operations contractors. Everybody's scale is different in this private sector mindset. This is an example of one client we do work with. Mike, you want to talk us through just a little bit about the traditional approach there?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Aaron. So private sector contractors who deliver transit service include people with a lot of the skills and abilities that you may be seeking. And so this is a relevant pool for us to search in. And I think that's the reason to refer also to private sector salaries. There's a little bit of difference in the private sector. There are other kinds of compensation. Sometimes there are bonuses and things like that. But nonetheless, the ideal candidate may very well come from the private side rather than the public.
And they do bounce back and forth quite a bit between contract agencies and public agencies. And so, you know, it is viable for sure.
Yeah, that's a good point, Mark. In my career, I did quite a bit of both. And as I say, the skills are very similar.
I will say that on that starting comp there at 150, would not challenge you to get too excited about that. Those are typically really small properties that are not comparable to Lane. I won't promise this, but maybe in some follow-up, we might be able to get a little bit more detail in terms of, you know, where they are, but obviously they're in a competition for pricing with other entities all the time. So it does become challenging information to get, but again, gives you perspective, which I don't think, you know, if we toggle back to what we're looking at over here in the transit peers, we're too far afield.
If I could say one other thing before you move on, Aaron.
Yeah.
I think it's important to remember that all of that data is context to help the board make a decision. None of those numbers dictate anything. They're just context for you to weigh as you see fit in deciding what the salary structure will be when we get to that point.
Mr. Grimaldi.
Are you factoring in the cost of labor in the different markets and making adjustments based on the cost of labor? Are you familiar with the concept?
We are. We haven't done that analysis for cost of living comparison. We have stayed generally west, with exception to the two in Michigan. That's a step really easy for us to do, and yeah, would certainly be able to provide that context as well.
No, cost of labor is not cost of living. Cost of labor is a measure of supply and demand across the entire labor market in an area. And what many I call progressive agencies are doing now is using the cost of labor to make adjustments as they're doing salary, setting salary schedules. And I was hoping we might be doing that, but we're not.
We'll look into it. And then just as a, this is really just as a reminder in terms of how we are thinking. So this obviously does factor into the compensation discussion for us. We have through our strategic business plan process advanced with a base compensation and incentive compensation model, with incentive compensation tied to LTD's success. Making sure that, you know, incentives are tied to organizational success through the implementation of the strategic business plan, using quantifiable measurable results from a third party, determining what the payments will be in advance for accomplishing that, and that overachievement is encouraged and recognized by the board as the agency excels at delivering its performance. I believe, and I wasn't involved in the strategic plan. I'm actually going to pause here and look to Chair Vargas or Mark, just in terms of some of the thinking that we went through and discussing around this with the board. I don't want to just rehash it, but just, you know, any thoughts you want to add in terms of the work that the board did in terms of defining this approach for compensation for your leaders.
Mark, I'll let you field that one.
Okay. So back up a little bit, and what are we, want me to explain what we're doing here?
Just a reminder of the philosophy that we have in place as we go forward. This is something we're going to need to be able to communicate to potential candidates so that they can see the potential. There's value in coming into an organization that knows what success looks like.
Right.
Go ahead.
I get it. So the whole deal is the coming out of the strategic business plan, we have some clear goals and measurements for the district. And so the decision is made, well, look, you know, if we're going to have these, let's put some compensation tied to these, because these, we've decided what success looks like for the organization. So for the organization is successful, the CEO should get some compensation based on that, outside of their base salary. And so, going forward, we think it's a good model, and the board agreed that it's a good model for a new CEO to come in and say, well, great, you know, I know what's expected of me, and, you know, I'm compensated if we can achieve these goals that the board has agreed are important. So
there's four parts to this philosophy, which we've talked through, but just wanted to reintroduce this concept. Of course, it's tied to our objectively measurable success outcomes, and where we are today, our base compensation right at 174, and that there is an incentive pool of up to $25,000 that's been eligible. So this will be interesting towards the conversation that we have in the recruitment. I think it'll be interesting to see how candidates respond and react to that. My suspicion is it'll be positive and favorable because it's so clear and because it's tied to objectively measurable data that they can see where and how they can do this. We've, you know, helped a couple other agencies deploy this, and certainly they're enjoying success in terms of achieving their outcomes. So go back to here, just in terms of this slide that's looking at your transit peers. I don't think it's an action item for today. It does sound like there's interest, and certainly interest on our part, to be provided some parameters. So as we get forward into the recruitment process, we've got a good understanding of what that salary range will be. Mr. Grimaldi, we'll take a look in at the cost of labor approach and see what application we can make here. And if there are other peers that we'd like, you know, you'd like for us to dig deeper into, we can certainly do our best to try and drum up that information if it's available. Ms. Secord.
I just wanted to ask, I know we had some feedback from the board, the community, employees, et cetera. And I wondered, are we going to weight attributes of a candidate? Sorry, it's a little loud here. To help us sort of say, you know, if they have more experience and they get, you know, tilted towards one side of the pay scale or another, similar to what you just showed us on the bonus structure. I'm curious if that would help us also as we're creating that range, sort of what pieces of their resume or experience that they're bringing to the table might be more heavily weighted than others, or if that's just something we're going to look at the whole candidate and decide. That'd be helpful just to kind of get a little bearings on how to use that information that you've provided.
Yeah, sure. Mike, you want to answer that one?
Yeah, thanks, Aaron. Yeah, I think if we establish a sense of the range, then we could place a candidate within that range based on a lot of things, based on the match between the job description that we're yet to finalize, based on experience, based on the degree to which they respond to the things that the board has said are important. But you know, that's really part of the art of this whole thing. So there's a lot of sort of intuitive movement within the salary range based on things, experience being one of the most important, but other things also.
And I guess we wanted to capture that intuitive piece because I want to make sure that we've got a clear process. So yeah, I think just as we go along, the more detail we can carve out, the better.
Sure.
Mr. Grimaldi?
So, you know, interestingly enough, my gut tells me the range you've presented is probably the range, but I don't want to rely on gut. I need, you know, some of the details so I can kind of filter things. You know, I'm willing to bet if you took out all the things that are annoying me this evening, we'd probably still end up in that same range. But I don't know that without looking at the details. So if you could give me the details, I'll be a lot happier.
Sure. All right. Last note here, just in terms of where we are with respect to the process, gonna, you know, drive through January here to complete our stakeholder interviews, complete the survey, get you that summary and feedback analysis for your review, take another look back at that compensation analysis and provide that detail for you all. And then make some recommendations on draft job description that's responsive to the community employee stakeholder feedback that we've received through the course of the process, and start developing, based on that, what we think a recruitment plan will be that allows us to really successfully find the right people to help us lead, with the goal of initiating recruitment shortly after our February board meeting, February work session. Mark, correct me, February work session. Questions, comments? I think I saw Ms. Cox. I don't know if Mr. Grimaldi, your hand is still up or if you, okay, Ms. Cox.
It's still on. Go to Susan, please.
Sorry. I'm sorry if this is a silly question, but is there no job description now?
Yes, there is a job description.
Okay.
There is. And so we want to work from that draft. The question we want to ask is, does that job description reflect the expectations that we have as a community, as employees, as a board of that leader? And so, you know, it's our hypothesis here that there's probably some fine tuning or some emphasis. You know, was communication as prioritized in the original job description as we're starting to hear from the community? If we're aligned around that communication because it's going to allow us to achieve that community value objective, then let's go ahead and create that expectation so that we, you know, we might not be looking for a nuts and bolts operator, right? We might be looking for somebody with more diplomatic skills to be able to negotiate the community and build the trust that that we desire.
And it was 7 years old when we posted it, so or it's, yeah, pretty close to it. So,
So you're saying that the job description that is currently there is 7 years old?
Yeah, it was the one that was developed when they hired AJ.
Okay, and so that isn't something that's reviewed and updated on a regular basis or ever? Sounds like maybe not.
Yeah, I mean, it's a board, so that's the only job description that's incumbent really on the board.
Yeah, I understand that. I was just asking for clarification.
Yeah.
And Susan, that's a great question. Just so you know, in 2019, I believe, is when we embarked on a overhaul of the GM evaluation process. So that was kind of like the catalyst to, hopefully we were getting to the job description as we started to kind of overhaul these documents and make things more clear and have clear expectations of the role. So there was some work done, and I think I can say we were probably headed down that path and we got to get back on. Aaron, you can call on Mr. folks Grimaldi. If you'd like.
Yeah, sorry, Mr. Grimaldi.
Yeah, sure. It would really help me if we had a little more of a detailed schedule of next steps. And what I'm particularly interested in is what are the decision points for the board? To just give you an example, at some point in time, somebody's going to need to do the initial screening. I really don't want that to be a board activity, but there are some other things that going forward where, you know, will the board select the finalists? And then, you know, who's going to be interviewing and things like that? Who's going to approve the contract? Any of those details where there's a board decision point, if we could get that in advance, and if anybody sees any issues with it, we can talk about that before we get to that point or beyond the point. I think it would just make things smooth, a little more smoothly for me personally.
Yeah, we'll collaborate with Mark and finalize that. And in no unfairness to you, we did have a schedule in the proposal process, and certainly just build upon that. I think we started a little bit later. I think we had a shorter time window on what we had laid out for that. So it's good to be updating, and sort we're of course we're doing that on our, you know, behind the scenes in our project management approach. So really easy to pull that together and let you know kind of our expectations of the timing. And it all assumes the timing's perfect, right? So we'll try and be reasonable in terms of what we give you. Ms. Secord.
I just wanted to check in. This is probably a silly question because this is your area of expertise, but I'm sure you have some sort of Oregon HR, Oregon law, you know, for pay scales, if there's anything that we need to be aware of. So just want to check in before we set a scale or a cap. Is there anything additional that we might need to be aware of, just because I'm not an HR expert. So just want to make sure we're about that in the context of whatever additional parameters we might need to just be thinking about.
Yeah, it's a good question. We'll actually collaborate and lean on LTD HR to provide us that compliance guidance. We're obviously really, really focused on the qualification, understanding expectations, but we'll vet, everything that gets written through the HR team to make sure that's, responsive to and reflects all of your policies. Madam Chair, I see no further questions, and it's only 6 o'clock.
Well, I appreciate everyone's questions pertaining to the presentation. I think, Gino's request of asking about these next steps, I also want to make sure that we're asking the question, hey, TransPro, how can we support you? And so please, part of that is let us know how this board can be extra involved, extra supportive, extra effort, whatever it takes to help you in this process. Answering questions, doing one-on-ones, whatever it takes, because this is our most important role and our most important job. And we need to make sure that we are 1,000,000% supporting you and on board so we can find this right GM. So it's a team effort. So I want you to feel like it's a team and we're all doing this together. So I'll just reiterate, just please let us know what it's going to take to all do this together. And we're here for you. And I appreciate you answering all the questions tonight. And we totally understand, the late document. I mean, these things happen. I think all of us are probably pretty swamped beginning of the new year. So I don't want you to feel like that was a dig or anything like that. It just was the honest truth. I think some of us just didn't get enough time to digest it.
Yeah, no worries. So, thank you. Yeah. Appreciate all of your comments, and absolutely will. We'll lean on you all.
Okay. This is your chance to say anything before I adjourn the meeting. So I just want to look around the room and make sure everyone's had a chance to ask a question or say a comment before we adjourn for the evening.
To hear if Pete or Don had anything that was either a red flag or something that they really liked, just because I don't think we heard from them and I'd love to hear their perspective.
Pete or Don, do you have any input on on the presentation this evening?
Not so far.
Okay. Thanks, Don. Pete?
I don't have any additional comments. I think I think some of the questions that Gino asked were very much reflected some of the things I was thinking, and so thank you.
Perfect. All right, and as a reminder to our board of directors, if there are additional questions after this, Mark Johnson is the one that you want to send those to or call, whatever works best for you, but Mark is available for any follow-up questions, and if need be, he can be the liaison there. So that's it. We're going to
one more.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Gino. Yeah. I didn't see that.
When can we expect the schedule with the decision points?
Within the week.
Perfect. Thank you.
Going once, going twice. Gino, is your hand still up, or do you have another? Oh, okay. Great. So 6:03, thanks everyone for your time. Thanks to our East Coast friends for staying up late and being with us on this very rainy evening. Please send your sunshine our way if it is sunny in Florida. And then board of directors, just a quick reminder for our regular board meeting. I know Don's not able to make it on the 19th. Please let me know if someone else is not able to make it. And thank you for signing on early to these board meetings so we can test our technology. I'll see you all in 2 weeks. Thank you.
Good night, everybody. Thanks.
Good night.
Have a good night, everyone.